Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 294, a half-hour segment updating corporate Germany. It's called Surprise Update on Corporate Germany. This is being recorded on April 22nd of the year 2001. We're going to begin by reviewing an aspect of a huge German power company called E.ON itself, resulting from the merger or the consolidation of two German utility companies. This company is now divesting itself of assets in anticipation of moving into the American market. We spoke about this in a big way in For the Record program number 292, titled Power Corrupts. This is from the Financial Times of Tuesday, April 10th of the year 2001. The German utility, now planning to move into the American market, is called E.ON. This article is co-authored by Andrew Taylor and Uta Harnischfeger. It's headlined, E.ON to sell off assets to smooth deal on power gen. The article reads in part as follows. E.ON, the German utility, pledged to sell its Degussa chemical division yesterday after agreeing to buy power gen, the British electricity group, in a deal worth £9.6 billion or $13.8 billion. U.S. regulations bar groups that generate less than 80% of their sales from electricity and gas supply from owning U.S. energy companies, skipping down. The acquisition of Power Gen will make E.ON the world's largest power supplier behind Électricité de France, the state-owned power group, which would be 30% bigger. The acquisition will give E.ON footholds in both the U.K. and U.S. energy markets. Ulrich Hartmann, E.ON's chairman, said, quote, "We have had very constructive talks with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, and they will grant us 3 to 5 years after the closing of the deal to get these things done." Well, as we looked at in For the Record program number 292, the Degussa firm from which E.ON is divesting itself, or of which it's divesting itself, was one of the IG-related companies that was deeply involved with the manufacture of Zyklon B, the poison gas in the gas chambers, in World War II. And as we're going to look at now, Degussa was also involved with helping to arm Saddam Hussein with some of his nuclear capability. That interdicted, at least for the time being, by the Persian Gulf War. We're going to review information from For the Record program number 87. This comes from the book The Death Lobby, How the West Armed Iraq, by Kenneth R. Timmerman. It's copyright 1991 and published in hardcover by Houghton Mifflin and Company. Of the Degussa subsidiary, the Degussa firm, a subsidiary of E.ON, now being spun off, we read, and its involvement with the selling of nuclear material to Iraq, we read, speaking of the Iraqis' potential fears about the deal with Degussa and its NuKem subsidiary, that's capital N-U, that's N-U-K-E-M, all in capitals. "The consortium was a wholly owned subsidiary of the German chemicals giant Degussa, which had invented and manufactured Zyklon B, the powerful cyanide gas that streamed out of the showerheads in Hitler's death camps, killing millions of European Jews. Degussa had also played a role in the Nazi effort to build an atom bomb, a key role in the Nazi effort to build an atom bomb, stopped only when its Oranienburg works near Berlin were flattened by U.S. bombers in 1945. That same year, as the Third Reich was going up in flames, Degussa's chairman, Hermann Schlosser, donated 45,000 Reichsmarks to Hitler's SS. By the way, as would come to no surprise by a veteran observer, that, of course, placed Degussa in the Himmlerkreis, the Himmler circle of friends that helped to finance the SS. That group survived into the post-war period, and it involved, among other companies, the Bush-related firm, or the Bush-connected firm, the Bush family-connected firm, the Hamburg-America line, as well as Bertelsmann. Continuing, 35 years later, Schlosser was still on the Degussa board, and in 1987 he was awarded the German Federal Merit Cross for his services to industry. One of Schlosser's services was shipping nuclear equipment and materials to almost every developing nation that was known to have a clandestine bomb program. Another was opening the vast Iraqi market to German firms. His and NuKem's readiness to supply nuclear materials to both India and Pakistan had impressed on Saddam Hussein that this was a man he could do business with." And that again about Degussa's NuKem subsidiary and its selling of nuclear materials to Iraq. In For the Record programs 275, 276, and 278, we spoke about the IBM suit against the lawsuit against IBM for its role in the Third Reich and the Holocaust. And I also speculated about the possible impact not only of that lawsuit, but of a number of Holocaust and Third Reich-related lawsuits on globalization and global corporate deregulation. In particular, I wondered about the role of the Wilmer Cutler and Pickering law firm with the CDU treasurer Matthias Wismann on its in its ranks. They were representing a number of German firms and Swiss banks in Holocaust-related lawsuits. They also were handling the lobbying for Deutsche Telekom in their efforts to buy a couple of American mobile phone companies. The lawsuit, which had been a sticking point in potentially obstructing any settlement for some of the survivors of the slave labor programs, has now been ended voluntarily. And again, this is a complex issue. For more discussion of it, see For the Record programs 275, 276, 278, and also number 279. The Financial Times of Friday, March 30th of the year 2001 discussed the ending of this lawsuit. This article is by John Authers, or Authers, A-U-T-H-E-R-S, Yvonne Esterhazy, and Richard Wolf in New York. The article is headlined, End of Suit Against IBM Removes Legal Hurdle to a Holocaust Deal. Subtitled, Decision to Abandon Case Raises Hope for Payments to Nazi Slave Laborers. And again, I've speculated about the role of the Third Reich-related lawsuits as a bargaining chip or a football, a legal football, with regard to the penetration of the American market by German corporations and also American corporate penetration of Europe. This article reads, The biggest remaining obstacle is a separate New York lawsuit against German banks over their role in stealing Jewish property under the Nazis. Michael Hossfeld, the lawyer who brought the IBM suit, said, quote, The main reason we accelerated our discussions was to remove any obstacle that can be used as an excuse by the Germans to avoid paying. We aren't going to give them that opportunity, unquote. By the way, the role of Gerhard Schroeder and German corporations in obstructing a settlement because of this IBM lawsuit was discussed at considerable length in For the Record program number 286, an update on Germany. So note that the IBM lawsuit has been dropped. This will perhaps clear the way for payments to the fast dwindling numbers of survivors of Third Reich atrocities. And whether or not some of my speculation in this regard was accurate, I would note that at right about this same time, surprise, surprise, it looks like the Deutsche Telekom purchase of VoiceStream and PowerTel is going to be approved. Deutsche Telekom has a controlling interest owned by the German government. That had previously been an obstacle to Deutsche Telekom's penetration of the American market. I discussed that at considerable length in For the Record program number 245 and subsequent broadcasts as well, all of those available from Spitfire. The Financial Times of Thursday, April 5th of the year 2001 discussed the congressional watchdog's approval of the telecom purchase of VoiceStream. Bear in mind that the lobbying for Deutsche Telekom was being handled by Wilmer Cutler and Pickering, one of whose members is Matthias Wismann, the treasurer for the CDU, and therefore inevitably involved in the CDU funding scandal. And I would note again that Wilmer Cutler and Pickering also handling the legal work for not only German corporations but also Swiss banks in Holocaust-related and Third Reich-related lawsuits. This article is by Peter Spiegel in Washington. It's headlined, Watchdog to Clear Telecom Takeover of VoiceStream. The article reads in part as follows. U.S. telecommunications regulators will approve Deutsche Telekom's $22.5 billion acquisition of VoiceStream, perhaps as early as this weekend, but are struggling with the detail of their consent order, which may delay finalization for a week. The deal has been one of the most politically contentious in recent years because of the German government's 58% stake in telecom. Critics, led by Senator Ernest Hollings, have argued U.S. law forbids foreign government ownership of U.S. telecommunications licenses. The two Republican FCC commissioners, including Michael Powell, chairman, by the way, he's the son of Colin Powell, are believed to have given their assent to the merger. The two Democrats are awaiting the new legal analysis before formally giving their approval. Skipping down. At the center of the machinations within the FCC is Mr. Holling's contention that the Communications Act of 1934, which governs all license transfers, bars foreign government ownership. By the way, that was passed in connection with the possibility, actually a reality, of Axis penetration of the American media market. And again, note that Michael Powell apparently gave his assent to the deal, and it looks like it is cleared to go. In For the Record program number 272, as well as in number 273, and in particular number 278, I took a look at the potential purchase, proposed purchase, of Silicon Valley Group by a Dutch-based holding company called ASM Lithography Holding. And in particular, in number 272, we took a look at ASM Lithography Holding's dealings with the Zeiss and Schott firms, deeply involved with, obviously, both German corporations, deeply involved with various countries deemed hostile to the United States. Both companies, I would note, were deeply involved with the arming of Iraq. I noted that Silicon Valley Group was co-founded by one of the principal financiers of the Aryan Nations, whose stance have now been has been disavowed by Silicon Valley Group. And I speculated about the possibility that Silicon Valley Group, a key strategic company involved with manufacturing much of the equipment for American surveillance satellites, could be... I speculated that perhaps ASM Lithography, a Dutch-based holding company, might be a Bormann-related company, noting that one of the principal cogs of the Bormann organization, the Thiessen family assets, involved the Heinrich Thiessen Bornemisza Dutch-based investment company that he managed from Lugano, Switzerland. In For the Record program number 293, we took a look at the marriage of Heinrich Thiessen Bornemisza's daughter Francesca to Carl Thomas, the heir to the Habsburg throne. He, in turn, is the son of Otto von Habsburg, a German representative in the European Parliament and a member of the Free Rudolf Hess Committee. He also, by the way, is a member of the CSU. That's the more reactionary Bavarian wing of the CDU. The CSU's best-known member was Franz Josef Strauss, who, as we saw in For the Record 278, was somebody who was close to Karlheinz Schreiber, involved with the CDU funding scandal. And Franz Josef Strauss was also somebody viewed with great favor by the post-war Himmler Kreis that we alluded to in connection with Hermann Schlosser. That was the group that funded the SS. It looks like the ASM Lithography sale, or purchase, I should say, of Silicon Valley Group is going to go forward. Certainly, that appears to be the case. And again, this had raised concerns about national security issues. We're going to take a look now at the Financial Times of London of Tuesday, April 10th of the year 2001. This article is by Peter Spiegel in Washington. It's headlined, Pentagon-backed sale of Silicon Valley Group. The article reads in part as follows. The U.S. Department of Defense has indicated it will agree to the sale of Silicon Valley Group to a Dutch company, removing a key hurdle from a $1.6 billion deal delayed for more than 3 months because of national security concerns. Senior Pentagon officials, who met Silicon Valley Group executives last week, are understood to have agreed that export controls negotiated with the companies will meet the concerns raised by critics that the deal would put vital technology in foreign hands. Defense officials have given warning, however, that there may be minor adjustments in the final terms still being negotiated with other government agencies. The sale of the relatively small SVG to Netherlands-based ASM Lithography has generated intense political controversy on Capitol Hill. A U.S. government official said the current agreement required ASM to invest in Tinsley Laboratories operations in the U.S. for a set period, perhaps 7 years. It also placed limits on the transfer of Tinsley's assets and personnel abroad for the same period. Again, note that ASM Lithography has very strong corporate relations with Zeiss and with the Schottwerks, both of them deeply involved with the Third Reich, the Zeiss Group, and deeply involved with the Bormann Flight Capital Organization, the Schott and Zeiss companies involved with the arming of Saddam Hussein, as we looked at in For the Record program number 87. The Uncle Sam and the Swastika broadcast documents the connections of the Schott Company to the wartime industry of the Third Reich. One of the things that I speculated about in For the Record program number 272 and also number 273 was the possibility that ASM Lithography Holding Company, because it is a holding company, might be connected to the Bormann Organization, because holding companies are one of the principal vehicles of the Bormann Organization, literally the economic and political component of a Third Reich gone underground. And I would note that the Netherlands was the base of operations for Heinrich Thyssen Bornemisza, again, whose daughter Francesca in the early 90s married Carl Thomas, the heir to the Habsburg throne. We looked at that in number 293. We're going to take a look now at the definitive work about the Bormann Organization. This book is, of course, titled Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. It's authored by Paul Manning, who was part of the CBS News team that covered World War II in Europe, along with Edward R. Murrow. He trained as a gunner aboard a B-17 to cover the air raids into Europe during World War II, shot down an ME-109, broadcast the surrender of Germany on the CBS radio network, then trained as a gunner for a B-29 to cover the raids into Japan, and then broadcast the surrender of Japan over the CBS radio network as well. He then spent much of his post-war career covering the Bormann Organization, several major book contracts that he had with major publishers were canceled due to pressure by the Bormann Organization. One of them in particular, the cancellation, that is, was obliged by pressure from the Thyssen family because it was a joint German-Dutch-owned company. That would strongly suggest the branch of the Thyssen family covered in the sections we're about to talk about, namely Heinrich Thyssen Bornemisza. When Paul Manning was going to... Oh, I would add that the publisher of the book, Lyle Stewart, published the book in hardcover in 1981. Lyle Stewart had both of his legs broken the week of publication. I would also point out that when Paul Manning was going to publish a follow-up book to Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, his son Jerry was murdered, apparently, in retribution for the publication of the book. We're going to take a look now at the Dutch-based operations of Heinrich Thyssen Bornemisza, and once again, we're going to be accessing the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. We're going to take a look now at Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and specifically we're going to take a look at the Dutch-based investment operations of Heinrich Thyssen Bornemisza, again, whose daughter Francesca just married Carl Thomas, the heir to the Habsburg throne, and the son of Otto von Habsburg, a reactionary CSU representative in the European Parliament and a member of the Free Rudolf Hess Committee. Turning now to Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, of Heinrich Thyssen Bornemisza, and bear in mind that the Bush administration, as we speculated about in number 272, has apparently indeed approved the sale of Silicon Valley Group to ASM Lithography Holding. I would also note that one of the businesses of Heinrich Thyssen Bornemisza was the Bank for Handel und Scheepvaart, which, as we looked at For the Record 278, was deeply involved with the Union Banking Corporation, which was a joint Bush family, Thyssen family venture confiscated by the alien property custodian in World War II, and its post-war liquidation resulted in the Bush family, for it had much to do with the Bush family fortune. Turning to Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, we read, "The two principal figures of the Thyssen fortune throughout the years preceding and during the Third Reich were Fritz and Heinrich. Neither liked the other, so they agreed to divide their inheritance into two separate spheres of interest, cooperating only when it was necessary. Fritz's circle of interest became the German holdings, Thyssen Gewerkschaft AG, Thyssen Company AG, Pelzer Stiftung, the Endowment Fund, and Famita AG. Heinrich devoted himself largely to holdings outside of Germany, Bank voor Handel en Scheepvaart Rotterdamse Trustees Kant voor NV Handels en Transport Maatschappij Vulcan Rotterdam Press und Walzburg AG and the August Thiessen Bank. And forgive my pronunciation there. Heinrich Thiessen became Baron Heinrich Thiessen Bornemisza when he married into Hungarian nobility. In this way, he has acquired Hungarian nationality, which gave him dual nationality. He also changed his residence to Switzerland when German pressures became too alarming, and in time acquired Swiss nationality. More about Heinrich Thiessen Bornemisza and his holdings in the United States. As Count Zichy Thiessen represents the largest shareholder in Thiessen AG from his home in Buenos Aires, the young baron directs his interests from his Via Favorita in Lugano. This is the heir to old Heinrich Thiessen. One such holding in the United States is Indian Head Incorporated, with American corporate headquarters at 1200 Avenue of the Americas, New York City. Thiessen Incorporated has its U.S. offices farther down this avenue at number 1114 in the W.R. Grayson Company building. Indian Head is a wide-ranging manufacturing conglomerate with 42 plants in the United States and 10,400 employees. It enjoys annual net sales of close to $604 million. For an industrial corporation of such size, it has a remarkably low profile. It distributes no annual report. "We are a privately held corporation," unquote. Like Thiessen Incorporated in the United States, it has no background ownership file with the SEC because it has never had to go public. When Thiessen bought Bud Manufacturing for $275 million, it was in cash, and therefore there was no requirement for corporate disclosures to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Still, goodwill is cherished, and German industrialists and bankers continue to strive to project a friendly German image in the United States. One noteworthy announcement made from Washington, D.C. in March of 1979 was that 57 priceless old master paintings from the collection of Baron Thiessen Bornemisza would be taken on a tour of the United States in 1979 and 1980. This collection of great masterworks is said to be, except for the Royal Collection of the Queen of England, the greatest private art collection now in existence. This public traveling exhibit constituted a major achievement as a public relations ploy. Ever cautious, however, no German firm underwrote the tour. Indian Head was kept out of the picture. Instead, a major U.S. corporation was chosen to underwrite the Masterworks tour. United Technologies of Hartford, Connecticut, 152,000 employees, 200 plants, and a worldwide marketing operation in power, flight systems, industrial products, and services, agreed to underwrite the cost of the venture as a favor to its German friend in Lugano, Switzerland. And the address at the opening press ceremony was by Hubert Faure, President and Chief Executive of United Technologies. I would note that the Bormann Organization goes far beyond German corporations and also has tremendous holdings in the United States, as the Thiessen Bornemisza Indian Head Company illustrates. That was one of the major companies discussed there, and it has no filing with the SEC since it's privately held. I would also note that the Bormann Organization utilizes Jewish businessmen as well. This is discussed by Paul Manning in Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. "It has drawn many of the brightest Jewish businessmen into a participatory role in the development of many of its corporations, and many of these Jews share their prosperity most generously with Israel. If their proposals are sound, they are even provided with a specially dispensed venture capital fund. I spoke with one Jewish businessman in Hartford, Connecticut. He had arrived there quite unknown several years before our conversation, but with Bormann money as his leverage. Today, he is more than a millionaire, a quiet leader in the community with a certain share of his profits earmarked, as always, for his venture capital benefactors. This has taken place in many other instances across America and demonstrates how Bormann's people operate in the contemporary commercial world in contrast to the fanciful nonsense with which Nazis are described in so much, quote, literature, unquote. So much emphasis is placed on select Jewish participation in Bormann companies that when Adolf Eichmann was seized and taken to Tel Aviv to stand trial, it produced a shockwave in the Jewish and German communities of Buenos Aires. Jewish leaders informed the Israeli authorities in no uncertain terms that this must never happen again, because a repetition would permanently rupture relations with the Germans of Latin America, as well as with the Bormann organization, and cut off the flow of Jewish money to Israel. It never happened again, and the pursuit of Bormann quieted down at the request of these Jewish leaders. And so again, note that ASM Lithography is going to be purchasing Silicon Valley Group, one of whose founders, by the way, was one of the principal financiers of the Aryan Nations. The last element of German corporate maneuvering we're going to talk about concerns the major Allianz insurance company, itself deeply involved with the Third Reich and the focal point of litigation, and its purchase of Dresdner Bank, also a major Third Reich and Bormann-connected institution. This, in turn, is going to permit the Munich Reinsurance Company, another Third Reich-connected company that we looked at in the Uncle Sam and the Swastika broadcast, and also in For the Record program number 219, to expand its insurance and bank holdings as well. This is discussed by the Financial Times of Friday, March 30th of the year 2001. This article is by Tony Major and John Willman, W-I-L-L-M-A-N. It's titled Germany Unwrapped, subtitled A Deal Between Allianz and Dresdner Bank Would Unwind the Company's Cross-Shareholdings and Intimidate Financial Services Groups Across Europe. The article reads in part as follows, speaking of the Allianz purchase of Dresdner Bank. If successful, the deal would allow complex cross-shareholdings between Germany's largest insurers and banks to be simplified, unwinding relationships created after the Second World War that have been that have tied up capital to the detriment of shareholders. As such, it could be the first of a series of deals to unlock billions of euros that have been lying unused in portfolios for decades. It would also create two giant bank assurance groups in Europe's largest market, an intimidating prospect for other financial services groups in Europe. Domestically, it would provide distribution networks for Germany's two largest insurers, enabling them to sell pensions and mutual funds to savers. At present, the Allianz family of banks has three members. The Munich Insurance Group owns 21.4% of Dresdner, 17.4% of Hypo Vereinsbank, the country's second largest bank, and 5.6% of Deutsche Bank, the largest. All three of them also own stakes in Allianz. The proposed deal would draw in another insurer that also has relationships with the three banks, Munich Reinsurance, the world's biggest insurer, and another powerhouse in Germany's industrial pantheon. And the article goes on to discuss how Munich Reinsurance would also be expanded. And this basically represents, deciphering the relatively complex language, it represents a huge investment expansion for Allianz, for Munich Reinsurance, and also for Germany's overlapping major commercial banks. And as we've looked at so many times, corporate Germany is controlled by the Bormann Organization. The Bormann Organization is the economic and political component of a Third Reich gone underground. I can appreciate that this will sound crazy to uninitiated listeners. Suffice it to say there are many programs available from Spitfire about the Bormann Group. Spitfire is a tape duplication service that can be reached at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com, and by the time the stations that broadcast this program receive it, there will be a detailed and annotated description of For the Record program number 294 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is now archiving the For the Record programs. On their website, you can visit their website at wfmu.org/Dave Emory. That's one word, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. Older For the Record programs are being archived on a related website, That is at archive.wfmu.org/archive/D/X/. That concludes For the Record program number 294, update on corporate Germany, being recorded on April 22nd of the year 2001. My name is Dave Emery.